Icy roads, stalled cars, frozen pipes. We're looking at Wisconsin's emergency response to the polar vortex. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The deaths of at least 8 people in the Midwest are believed to be connected to the streak of extreme cold and icy weather in recent days. Hospitals treated an influx of frostbite. How did you manage this life-threatening cold spell? Did your pipes break? Did your heater struggle or stop? Did the power go out? Did you work in a warming shelter in your community over the past few days? How did you provide support for people who needed a safe and warm place to go? We're at 800-642-1234. Tell us about your situation in an email, ideas@WPR.org. Lori Getter is a spokesperson for Wisconsin Emergency Management. Lori, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, let's look at this broadly. How did Wisconsin fare during the outbreak of dangerous temperatures and wind chill?
I think people in Wisconsin did a great job. The media, public service agencies, first responders, volunteer groups really got the word out early on over the weekend and late last week that we were going to have this bitter cold and some heavy snow on Monday and bitter cold. And I'm really proud to say that Wisconsinites, you know, met the warning. They checked on their neighbors, checked on their friends, took those extra precautions, and I think that's why things went so well. We did have a few deaths, unfortunately, but again, people really took this seriously.
What do we know about the deaths from the severe weather?
Well, again, we don't know yet. There's still autopsies pending, but what we've seen in past cold weather cases is they are usually senior citizens or people with medical conditions, especially heart disease or asthma, that may be out there shoveling and breathing that cold air or the exertion. So we'll learn more about these cases. But again, it comes down to making sure you check on your friends, check on your family, make sure everyone's okay.
So Wisconsin declared a state of emergency. Our neighbor Minnesota did not. Was the National Guard needed in this situation?
The reason why Governor Evers declared was very proactive in declaring a state of emergency is basically to make sure all state resources, including the Wisconsin National Guard, if needed, were ready to be deployed. But fortunately, our communities didn't need any assistance. But during emergencies, every minute counts, and we just wanted to make sure we were prepared to provide any assistance that our local governments may have needed.
When did Wisconsin first hear about and start preparing for the polar vortex? When did the wheels really start turning?
It actually started a week ago Thursday. We received some information from the National Weather Service that there was a chance to have bitter cold temperatures that included record-setting wind chills. And so that obviously perked our up, and we were busy on the phone with the National Weather Service. That led to communicating with our county and tribal emergency management directors and first responder groups. And so it was a busy few days before the systems actually started to hit Wisconsin.
We're talking with Lori Getter. She's a spokeswoman for Wisconsin Emergency Management, talking about the reaction to the polar vortex, how the state fared. How did you do during the cold weather? Did your pipes break? Did your furnace struggle or stop? Did the power go out? How have you been managing the challenges of severely cold temperatures? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And parents and caregivers, schools have been closed for days now. How are the kids in your life doing? Have they been frustrated to not be able to go outside? And how did they stay busy? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Lori, going back to the state of emergency during the past few days, the National Guard not needed in the situation, but when a state of emergency is declared, what exactly does that entail?
Well, basically what that means is that there is an incident underway, or such as a tornado or flood, or potential for a very serious incident, such as in this case. And basically what a state of emergency does is orders state agencies, including the Wisconsin National Guard, to be ready to assist any community that needs assistance. whether that is National Guard assets, it could be assets from other state agencies. During the flooding, we had a lot of different organizations, including correctional inmates that were used to help fill sandbags. So it just depends on what is needed. But again, it heightens the seriousness of the situation. And this was a very serious situation. This was deadly wind chills that were going to hit the state. And so, again, we wanted to make sure we had all the assets that the state has ready to assist local communities. Fortunately, again, communities were able to handle it. First responders did a great job, as well as did utility companies and everyone who had to work outside to help keep our citizens safe.
Well, part of being prepared for a weather emergency is having supplies in your home. Chris in Adams has thoughts on that. Chris, hi.
Hi, I want to put a positive spin on this. I went out in advance of the snowstorm and bought a whole pile of really great food and wine, and I have been hunkered down cooking up a storm. I also have been really, really enjoying my amaryllis, which are blooming, and my orchids, which are blooming. And I wanted to send kudos out there because I live in a great neighborhood. All of the neighbors came together to shovel everybody out and charge cars and do the great thing for people. And the birds are eating me out of house and home, and I want to give a piece of advice to everybody, because your screener said to me that she was getting cabin fever. The Olbrich Gardens is sponsoring the Madison Orchid Show this weekend, and the weather is going to be nice. And if you have the need, it's not only a visual, it smells so good.
Absolutely. Good for your senses. Chris, I have to ask, though, what did you cook during the storm?
Oh, you're not going to want to know. I made a pork roast with a honey orange glaze, Brussels sprouts, apples in a sherry sauce with mushrooms and onions and stuff, and lots of fresh rosemary.
Nice.
And then I made sautéed salmon and shrimp with hollandaise sauce and linguine, and I'm a gourmet cook.
I love it. Chris, thank you so much for that. And Lori, it sounds like Chris was really living it up indoors.
He did. And that's wonderful. I mean, this is wintertime in Wisconsin, and, you know, one of the things we love about our state are the four seasons. And I want to go to her house, because I think I had chicken soup or something for one of my meals. But she did bring a good point up, talking about that she, you know, went to the store and stocked up. And one of the things that we're always encouraging people to do is to make sure you have an emergency kit in your house. Now, I'm not talking salmon and pork loins, but what I'm talking is having items in your house in case you should lose power. The crews did a great job getting power restored to those communities that lost power. But, you know, having those items prepared, also having emergency kits in your vehicle in case you were to get stuck, because it is going to take crews a while to get to you. And one other point she did make is everyone helping each other, and that's really the Wisconsin spirit. You know, everyone helping the shovel, and that was one of the messages we really pushed this past week, is helping your neighbors, checking on your friends, checking on elderly neighbors, you know, keeping people, just checking up on them, making sure everyone's okay. And so that's great. I'm very happy.
Do we have any numbers on how many people lost power and for how long?
You know, that's really hard to determine. Mm-hmm. We did hear several cases of, you know, a couple thousand here, a couple thousand there. The problem is the state has many co-ops as well as the major utilities as well. So it's hard to, you know, get a handle on that. But we did have power outages. The good news is most of those communities that didn't have power, immediately a shelter was open. Example was in Cumberland. They had a power outage, and I think it lasted about 4 hours. They opened up a church right away, and so people had a place to go. The first responders were helping people if they needed a ride there. So communities really, you know, answered the challenge to this polar vortex. I mean, opening shelters, keeping shelters open. So they did a great job.
Was Wisconsin's electric grid taxed here?
Well, I'm not the one to answer that, but I think obviously the furnaces were going full speed this past week, but again, our utility companies did a great job. And again, when there was power outages, for whatever reason, the crews really, you know, braved that bitter cold and got the power back on as quickly as possible. And also thanks to the first responder communities, and the volunteer groups for opening numerous shelters across the state. On my desk, I would get emails all the time about new warming centers or warming shelters that were opened up. So, and they had plans in place. It wasn't just at the spur of the moment. But again, you know, the state did a great job in trying to help people and keep them warm and safe.
Wisconsin has cold weather, but this was highly unusual. What did your team learn from this emergency?
I think it's something we always learn is being prepared and, again, continuing to communicate. I think what helped us was the early notification to get information out to the first responders, to county and tribal emergency management. And I think it's something we, you know, we'll learn. We'll still need to do an after-action report later on to see what, you know, things we could have improved on. But, you know, there was at least one death, and so that's sad. And so we need to learn from that. What happened? What can we do better to get messaging out to help people for whatever reason didn't heed those warnings?
So is there anything in the short term here, as you look back at this polar vortex, that you can change right away or something you can learn from?
I think it's still messaging to the public. Again, telling people what's going to be happening and encouraging people to be prepared, to have emergency kits at their home and their vehicle, have that emergency plan. And again, to have that community in your neighborhood, making sure you're able to help people. And to be honest, right now, we're starting to look forward or looking forward to what's going to be our next emergency. And I don't mean that happily, but we have a lot of snow on the ground and we're going to have some warm temperatures and potential rain and freezing rain. And what is that going to mean? You know, it's going to mean some icy roads. There could be some ice jams, especially along the Rock River. And if this snow should melt quickly, you know, we could have some flooding issues, which is really awful in the wintertime because there's no place for that water to go with the ground frozen.
Lori Getter stays with us from the Wisconsin Emergency Management. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we debrief on the polar vortex that was. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show as we look back at how we got through this last week with Mother Nature bringing us record-smashing cold from the Arctic. Let's find out how Wisconsin farms made it through the deep freeze. It is the nature of the work. Farmers often spend at least some portion of their workday outdoors or in unheated buildings. We want to find out how livestock were kept safe in this deep freeze. You can share your story at 800-642-1234. Do you work on a farm? How did you exercise horses? How did you cut down on the drafts in the barn? How did you keep your cattle water thawed? What did you do with your cattle? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lori Getter stays with us. She's spokesperson with Wisconsin Emergency Management. Now let's bring in Dr. Eric Rooker. He is a veterinarian at Dairy Doctors Veterinarian Service in Plymouth and a member of the Wisconsin Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Rooker, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, what is the effect of severely cold temperatures and wind chills on farm animals?
Well, farm animals generally, when we work at Dairy Doctors, we work with dairy cattle and some beef cattle. So those animals can exist in a comfortable environment between 25 to 65 degrees. So they're used to some of the normal average temperatures we see in the winter, but these extreme temperatures that we've seen in the last 3 to 5 days here have really kind of taken a toll on the farmers themselves as well as the animals. Luckily, through some good training and husbandry taking care of the animals, our clients have been able to weather the storm, without a pun intended there. Those animals can weather that storm when we provide them with good bedding and a windbreak to basically keep them out of the elements. Several of our clients actually have facilities where the animals are in a, you know, enclosed building, and that building, believe it or not, is held just below freezing. I was in one yesterday that was 27 degrees, so I was sweaty while I was doing her check, and and the cows were comfortably eating, laying down and resting. So they can definitely weather a storm like this. It's not the easiest thing to do, but they can weather through it pretty well.
What about bedding and hydration? How do you keep that correct in these types of conditions?
So bedding can be very difficult. A lot of our clients planned ahead. They fed animals for basically 2 days worth of feed to make that easier on them, so they wouldn't be exposed to as much extreme there. They bedded them extra deep, so twice or three times as much bedding to provide them some insulation and an area to bed down and nestle in and insulate themselves. And as far as water is probably the most challenging thing I would say farmers would say in this cold. Keeping fresh water that the animals can drink and access without ice over the top is very challenging. I'm sure there's been many thousands of gallons of hot water buckets dumped into waters to break ice or thaw them out. Luckily, many of our farms are going to have water heating elements in the water to keep that water accessible to the animals. But definitely fresh water to these animals in a cold Arctic vortex like we had is probably the most difficult thing for people as well as animals.
Can there be any lasting effects of the polar vortex on large animals? For instance, for dairy cattle, can it impact production of milk?
Certainly, most certainly. Just like in people, the young and the old are most affected in dairy cattle. So calves are our primary concern in cold like this. Again, bedding them really deep so they can insulate and nest down. We actually provide them jackets to keep them warm and comfortable through all of this. We also provide them usually an additional feeding to two feedings a day to give them some extra energy to basically provide warmth to their bodies. And older animals also, just like people, suffer arthritis, generalized medical conditions. Those are the things that we kind of see in the cold like this. Those are the severely affected ones. As far as the normal production animal, day-to-day healthy animal, we'll see a small drop in production, in milk production, or even in your beef animals. You'll see a small drop in rate of gain because they do burn extra calories. The body shifts to increase the heat produced, and that instead of going to production in milk or growth is going to produce heat to keep the animal at a sufficient body temperature.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Rooker about how livestock and farmers fared during this dangerously cold polar vortex. We're talking large animals here, but Lori Getter of Wisconsin Emergency Management, let's talk about pets for a moment. How did pets do during this emergency?
I think also with the messaging, a lot of people brought their pets inside because dogs and cats are very susceptible to frostbite. And so I think everyone really heeded the warning and brought their pets inside and took those extra precautions.
And people also put out extra bird seed. As Chris said, our caller, she said the birds were just going crazy for the seed.
They were. And, you know, Mother Nature is impressive. And this morning at my own house, the birds are out and they're hitting my bird feeders. And I did put out extra bird seed, as many other people did. And so, you know, wildlife knows what to do when there's these extreme temperatures and they're able to hide and take care of themselves.
Dr. Rooker, you know, meanwhile, winter continues. We have a drastic shift in temperatures now. What tips would you like to leave people, farmers, people with livestock, when it comes to caring for cattle in, you know, weather extremes and shifting weather conditions?
One of the primary problems that they're going to see is pneumonia in their young animals. Lots of barns have been closed up tight so they don't freeze, and a lot of times what we see from clients of ours is that those barns stay tight, frozen, or stay nice and tight and sealed for a little bit too long. So I would encourage people, as the temperatures start to thaw out and we approach that 40-45 degree mark early next week, start opening those buildings up a little bit, increase the air quality, and you can continue, you know, feeding the higher level nutrition for a couple days past to catch the animals back up in terms of growth and production. Keep that energy level high and help them to catch back up after they weathered the storm.
Lori, as people get outside now and look around their own homes, their own dwellings, and their cars, what should they watch for as they regroup after this, polar vortex?
Well, you want to make sure, obviously, that all your vents are clear, which is very important. And You know, the best thing you can do is, if you asked me earlier, what did we learn? People should talk about what did they learn and what would they do differently. And again, maybe having some disaster kits, having some items on hand in case they were to lose power, making sure their carbon monoxide detector was working. You know, so a lot of things that everybody has learned. But again, we now need to move forward to what our next emergency may be and to be ready for what next thing could happen.
Dr. Rooker, do you see farmers pretty well prepared even for extreme weather like this?
Most certainly. Most of our clients have seen, not as extreme as the last 2 days in the last 5 years, but they have seen extremes like this before. 2, 3, 4 days in advance, they're already preparing the equipment. Like I said, some of them are feeding animals 2 days in advance just to make sure that they can access feed. You never know what's not going to start in the cold like this. So they're feeding in advance, bedding them in advance. They are very well prepared, and they kind of know on their operations what could be an issue, and they're doing their best to prevent that. Obviously, you can't prevent everything, but they're usually well prepared.
Lori, as we wrap up, any last pieces of advice that you would have? Because as you look ahead here with this wild swing in temperatures, how are you gearing up for that, and what are you watching for there?
Well, we're watching for potential flooding, believe it or not. We have a lot of snow on the ground. If we have warm temperatures and rain, that water's going to melt and the ground's frozen. So we're not, you know, that could impact some of the rivers and creeks. We're also looking at potential ice jams, so we're monitoring those as well. And we could have temperatures going back below zero again. So this is winter in Wisconsin, so we just need to be prepared. And the Weather Service, I have to give big kudos to. They did a great job in keeping us informed throughout this polar vortex and basically all the time throughout the year about what systems are moving into Wisconsin. So the more warning we can have, the better we can prepare to be ready to respond.
Lori, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Lori Getter is Crisis Communications Manager with Wisconsin Emergency Management. And Dr. Rooker, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me today.
Dr. Eric Rooker is a veterinarian at Dairy Doctors Veterinarian Service in Plymouth and a member of the Wisconsin Veterinary Medical Association. Just ahead, the Milwaukee County Zoo has a new groundhog who will make his debut in time for tomorrow, Groundhog Day. We'll learn more about him and about the history of this holiday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.